theater.org. The Theater Guild is a proud supporter of WGTD. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. This is Education Matters on WGTD 91.1 FM, your gateway to public radio. I'm co-moderator Chuck Wolbers, and we are broadcasting from the Gateway Technical College Kenosha campus studio location, high atop the ultra-modern, full-on, cutting-edge Bioscience and Information Technology building. Today, I am pleased to share the chair, so to speak, during my time slot, with the Education Matters co-moderators, Steve Brown, Karen Sconsert, Dwayne Olson, and Mike Kehoe. We will discuss their backgrounds and involvement with the show. Now, Education Matters is the only weekly program in Southeast Wisconsin that's devoted exclusively to education issues and matters, obviously the name of the title of the show. Five co-hosts with different education-related backgrounds and perspectives take turns leading the program, and we are all here this morning. The program airs Saturdays from 10:30 to 11:15. Now, as I do with all my guests, I am going to invite our guests and the other co-moderators to share their professional preparation credentials with us as they have supported or contributed to their professional and personal accomplishments. Additionally, I'd ask them to share with us how long they've been doing the show and the role education has played in their lives. In other words, why does education matter to you? I will start with Steve Brown, and we'll go around the table.
Okay, I really appreciate it, and it's great being on with all the other co-hosts here of Education Matters. I have been a co-host of Education Matters. I believe this is year number 12 for me. There was about an eight-month period when I was down at Texas A&M Corpus Christi where I was teaching. As far as my background, I started out actually in broadcast journalism and then switched to education. I've been a high school English and social studies teacher, along with being a principal and a district-level administrator, and I've taught at the university level for well over 20 years. I'm also currently serving on the school board in Salem, out in the western part of Kenosha County, and as many of you know, I'm also the co-executive producer of the WGTD Radio Theater. As far as why education matters to me, I'll make it very right to the point. As a high school student in Florida, in Miami, in Dade County, there were two teachers who helped to keep me in school, Doris Ann Johnson and Jesse Wilson. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I don't know what I would be doing or where I would be. But education matters to me because it mattered to them, and it's made a great deal of difference in my entire life.
Well, thank you. And I would like to go next to Dwayne Olson.
Well, I grew up in Estherville, Iowa, and I grew up wanting to be a teacher. I have my bachelor's degree from Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Actually, it's Augustana University now. My MA from University of Northern Colorado and PhD from Iowa State University. I taught high school in Iowa for that was American History and Social Studies for 12 years, and then I went to Iowa State for 3 years, and I spent 28 and a half years at UW Parkside in teacher education. So why does education matters? Well, I think we live in a world that you need to have an education or you're not going very far.
Well put. And our next co-moderator, Karen Sconsert.
Hi. Well, I've been listening to public radio since I was in college. And when this opportunity came up about 2.5 years ago, actually, Dave Cole, the station manager, put something on the Facebook page for WGTD and said he was looking for co-hosts, and I thought, I can do that. I do interviews for my research, so I've done hundreds and hundreds of interviews. Why not try this? So then I brushed up by listening to Terry Gross a little bit more than usual, and that's how I ended up doing this. I've been a teacher at some level from pre-K through graduate school in five different states. I grew up in Wisconsin, went to Lawrence University, became a history teacher and a theater teacher, taught in Indiana, in Princeton, New Jersey, and then moved back to the Midwest to go to graduate school. And then after graduate school, I taught at Loyola, and then at Ursinus College in Eastern Pennsylvania. And then came back to Carthage, to Wisconsin, to teach at Carthage 10 years ago. I am the parent of a seventh grader at Bullen Middle School, and also I serve on the Kenosha Public Library Board as well.
Wonderful. And before I go to our next co-moderator, I just wanted to clarify, hopefully, for people's information. You said that you conduct interviews as part of your research. Is there a particular area of research that might be helpful for us to know that you do this with?
Well, when I was in graduate school, I did research on the Chicago Public Schools and on teacher education. And research on the way that community organizations interact with the school system. And then I've continued to do that here. And most recently, I've been working on a project where I'm trying to find out how vouchers are implemented in the private schools in Racine.
Ah, so a longstanding connection with the public education platform. And one more co-moderator sitting to my right, and that would be Mr. Mike Keough.
Chuck, I've been involved, I guess education and radio are part of the DNA of my family. I've been involved in both pretty much all my life, probably the most significant with respect to what we do on this program is my background as a teaching foster parent since 1982. And all of my kids have gone through Kenosha Unified. I've been boots on the ground in various Kenosha schools since for the last 15 years, and for the last 4 years at Bullen Middle School as a special ed support person. I was a family court commissioner for 15 years, and family court commissioner is kind of a social worker with a gavel. And so and all of the work that I did had to do with children.
Okay.
In divorces and neglect cases and abuse cases and things like that. And finally, and something that's a very driving force with me is that in the late 50s and early 60s, my family was living in rural Alabama, and those were the last days of Jim Crow. Actually, Jim Crow is still with us in rural Alabama.
Yeah.
And that had a profound effect on me, the segregated school system and all the problems that it has. And the fact that what we are witnessing right now is a resegregation of schools in the South, and I think that is drifting north. That is something that motivates me a great deal.
And I'm sure there'll be room to talk about that, a very, very compelling topic. And from the sounds of your professional background, especially in that legal connection, that's been a longstanding education every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I thank all the other co-moderators for their background. I'll go into some of mine. I'm Chuck Wolbers. I'm currently teaching in KUSD as a special education teacher in the STEP program. At which we are in a community campus at the Boys and Girls Club, and STEP stands for Successful Transitions for Exceptional People. And this involves our 18 to 21-year-old students. I received my undergraduate degree from East Stroudsburg State College in Pennsylvania, which is now East Stroudsburg University, in health and physical education with a concentration in aquatics. In other words, I was a swimmer. And to this day, love nothing more than daydreaming about body surfing on Nauset Beach in Cape Cod. So if that tells you something about my direction, I'm hoping it's helpful. I received my and earned my master's degree from Webster University with a Master of Arts in Management. And at that time, I was studying and doing my graduate work. I was the first sergeant at the Sergeant Major's Academy in lovely El Paso, Fort Bliss, Texas. And the greater part of my education I have to attribute to a longstanding military career. And I do have my undergraduate, at least level, certification in cross-categorical special education from Carthage College and alternative education from Concordia University. Why education matters to me, I suspect that it would be easiest to say as I look at the inspiring co-moderators around me. It is in my DNA. Both my parents were teachers, and they were professors at the college level, and I saw that as an inspirational means of access for me to develop what possibilities were available for a lifestyle that I valued, certainly, and thought that I had a better degree of access to with respect to knowing something about it. I am motivated daily to be the teacher I wish I had. And I think that some of the best examples I've had in education are probably the worst teachers on the planet. And it's easy to go by because when your inclinations or instincts are put to the test, you remember one of those teachers and do 180 degrees different. That's why education matters to me. As we get ready to start the panel discussion, certainly there is going to be an opportunity to digress, I'm sure, as some of the topics and subject matter comes up, because we're really looking at a time now when the education landscape is evolving. And I'll be mentioning that later, but it's very important to remember that a lot of what we deal with in education right now is cast in jello, in a way. And Mike brought up an interesting concept and consideration about the segregation of schools and as that creeps north. I'm sure that will come up, but it goes along with a question that we all saw and agreed with earlier, that what are our biggest concerns right now about education from preschool through graduate school? And not that it has to go in any particular order, but I'll let anyone tee off, and we'll try and keep or limit some of our responses so that we can give everyone an opportunity to respond as well as keep the program going. Karen, for example, what are your biggest concerns right now about education from preschool through graduate school?
Well, I think we have an issue. We're going to come up on a huge teacher shortage. The baby boom generation is retiring, and enrollments are down across the country for various reasons.
Are enrollments down as a result of population attrition? Because it's a mandate. It's a compulsory education system that we have. So,
I think they're down because there's been a lot of negative talk about teachers and teaching for about a decade now.
So a parent just says, I don't care about the law, you're not going to school because of those teachers.
No, the people don't want to go into teaching.
Oh, the people, okay.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a clarification.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, understood.
Right, so for example, at Carthage, our enrollments in teacher ed are down, but our enrollments in the college are not down. So that means those students are still going to college. They're just choosing to do something else.
Sure.
So that's a concern that I have. The other thing is excessive testing. I think if people really knew just how many days per year were devoted to standardized testing in our schools,
I think
they would be shocked. And this is, escalated to everyone, but, I mean, it's been around for, I was in Chicago in the 1990s, and we were doing excessive testing then. So I think that's an issue. It may drop off. I'm not really sure. I think there's a lot of infrastructure and a lot of investment in that field. So I think there are some companies that stand to lose a lot of money if we cut off the excessive testing. So I'm not sure that it's actually going to happen.
A profit motive that perhaps a lot of taxpayers are not aware of.
Right.
And on top of that, what I'm hearing is an inordinate amount of concentration on testing, standardized testing, preparation for it, data collection, as opposed to, on the other side, actual instructor contact with students. Mm-hmm. And if asked, what do you think the taxpayer would opt for, instructor contact or more data?
Well, I'm sure that they would opt for more instructor contact.
Absolutely,
so.
Sure. And I think that I could see Dwayne ready to
comment. Depends on who that person is in mm-hmm. the public, because there are a lot of people who want data about what's going on as far as schools are concerned. And certainly schools need a certain amount of data, but you need to really be careful about it. I think it's a point well taken. We need to make sure we have enough testing, but not too much.
If I may, at this point, I'd like to jump in because we are about to go to the big state standardized testing, which is going to basically shut down our school for a week and disrupt things for a longer period of time than that. And one of the things that disturbs me, in addition to the disruption that occurs in the schools with this very extensive testing, is that because all of the testing is done electronically, we have a situation in which people are being tested and taught on vocabulary instead of substance. Things that are easy to grade in a multiple-choice situation that you can put on a multiple-choice test, less emphasis on reasoning, on ability to write. Those kinds of things don't get tested under these large systems that are based on the ability to process lots of test results in a short period of time.
And I'll jump in here as far as that question goes about some of the biggest concerns right now about education at all levels. I think one is the area of public confidence in public education. I can't speak for everyone else here at the table, but I'm a product of public education, and I think there certainly is a place in our country, in our nation, for both public education and, of course, for private or parochial education. But I think the issue of public confidence, and I think that's up to school districts and up to universities and up to members of school boards. I sit on a school board, and I sit in at meetings, and people raise questions, and I'm glad they do. I'm glad they're asking important questions. But oftentimes, when you dig down below the surface, you find that most of their information is coming from other sources that are not either are not based on data, but they're based on emotion, and that's fine. I mean, we all react to emotion, and I see that. Another area, and Mike, you brought it up, and that's this whole issue of resegregation of our public schools nationally. One of the things I did not mention is that I teach full-time now at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, and I'm doing research and I've had several things published recently with Cheryl Brown Henderson, whose father was Oliver L. Brown, after whom Brown versus the Board of Education is named. It was actually made up of five cases, but Cheryl's family, of course, lived in Topeka, Kansas. But our schools today, in 2017 nationally, are just as segregated as they were in 1968, not because of the courts, but because of where people live, because of the economy. Everyone wants their child to go to the school closest to where they live. And if they happen to live in an impoverished area, they're going to be going to a school that oftentimes, not always, and I'm not talking about Kenosha or Racine, but just on a national basis, if they live in an area that they are living in an economically disadvantaged part of a city or town or village, regardless of where they live, oftentimes the school facilities are not up to what the standards are for that school district or the area. Oftentimes, the teaching staff, and we have incredible teachers in our profession. And just as a side note, I personally get tired of hearing people blasting away and criticizing teachers. I don't care what they teach, what areas, where they are, what their educational backgrounds are. Our teachers do one heck of a job. And as a former school principal, yeah, there were some teachers who maybe shouldn't be in the classroom, and it's our job as administrators to make sure they're not in the classroom.
But isn't that could almost be said of any profession?
Absolutely.
You've got a certain percentage.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Is there for
yes.
a paycheck or whatever.
No, absolutely. So, but I think this issue, though, of resegregation is something that people are not talking about. And an article that Cheryl Brown Henderson and I just wrote, it's called Brown at 62, Marching Back into the Future. And I think that's what's happening. And I know we'll talk more about other issues, and we'll talk about our new Secretary of Education at the national level and how the new administration is going to approach education. But those are some of my concerns right now about education.
Wonderful. And I certainly would agree and would resonate most vigorously that as you pointed out, there's a lot of bashing going on about teachers and the public perception and teachers being on the dole. And that's oftentimes being voiced by people who are on the dole. And they are on the public paycheck as governors or judges or whatever. And ironically, these are the very same people that benefited most graciously from a good public education.
Absolutely.
And I think that gets lost sometimes in this. It's not an argument, but it's a perception as we point fingers and so forth. And where teachers have lost some of that professional regard and reputation, I think is wrapped up in some of those demographic dynamics that Steve was referring to. People don't just move to be close to a school. There's employment, there are churches, there are stores. And that is why people make choices to move to certain neighborhoods is based on values and what they can afford. And again, at the core of all that is a huge disparate economic dichotomy. And that's something that educators hopefully will be able to weigh in on. And as we go a little bit further forward here, I know I'm going to have to do a reintro, but I may as well get to another topic which it came up. What do each of you think about the direction that education will be going in Wisconsin and in Southeast Wisconsin in particular? This can cover everything, but there are voucher concerns, school funding, competing with Northern Illinois for teachers. These are all possible considerations. Is there anything that in particular that resonates with you? It's going back into the order again, Karen. What do you think about the direction that education is headed in Wisconsin, and particularly Southeast Wisconsin?
Well, because I work, I teach teachers at Carthage, and we have a lot of our students come from Illinois. So a lot of times they're kind of unaware of what's specifically going on in Wisconsin. They don't really understand Act 10 or any of the things that have happened. Back in their home districts, there still are unions that are quite strong. And so most of those students just go right back to Illinois after they're finished. And
okay.
And a lot more of our Wisconsin students, there are fewer of them than there used to be, but they also often opt to go to Illinois. So I think that's something, despite what we hear about state finances, and it's a big issue in Illinois, the salaries on the face of them tend to be as high or higher. And so, for young teachers, that looks like a good place to go.
This is Education Matters on WGTD 91.1, your Kenosha gateway to public radio. I'm co-moderator Chuck Wolbers, and with me this morning are my other co-moderators, Steve Brown, Karen Sconzer, Dwayne Olson, and Mike Keough. We are discussing a variety of topics which are important to the focus of this weekly show and gaining valuable insight into our connection and commitment to the evolving landscape which characterizes education. Karen was just talking briefly about some of the concerns as far as the direction that public education specifically, will be going in Wisconsin, and was talking about some of her students at Carthage that are just going to return to Illinois on the basis of maybe just the appearance of it's a fatter paycheck,
mm-hmm.
Without taking into consideration some of those deeper political lifestyle, quality of life related issues, taxes. What is the outlook for taxes in Illinois in the future once their budget issues start to be, if not resolved, at least addressed?
I'd like to get back to the voucher issue, because I think that's something the state of Wisconsin is really going to have to struggle with, because that is being expanded and expanded. And ultimately what we have is two systems of education that we're supporting with state money. Mm-hmm. Now, do we have the state accountability? Well, the public schools then, I think, have the accountability in terms of being tested and data reported and that sort of thing. But I don't think we're getting the same thing out of the voucher schools and so forth. And that doesn't seem
equitable.
It doesn't seem equitable at all.
I think I'm hearing. Yeah.
And sometimes I think, in fact, one of the conclusions I've reached over the years is I think that the public schools are much better than they're given credit for, and many times the private and the parochial schools are not as good as they're given credit for, because the data are not available in terms of what those schools are about.
But the outcomes between the private and parochial schools, for example, that are on the voucher system that are not held to the same level of public scrutiny because of the public money that the public schools receive and are more conspicuously accountable for, the smaller numbers, and perhaps their placement percentages are higher. Or is there something in terms of getting jobs? Or are they doing better on college placement tests? And
well, I think the initial sort is, I mean, who is going into those private or parochial schools? First of all, they have parents who are concerned about education and so on. And sometimes I wonder if it isn't racism that's motivating people to take their children out of public schools.
That's exactly what I was going to get to, because so many of the arguments that you hear about performance of different schools and the research it's based on, that research is not really good research. And what we are seeing is a lot of people fleeing to parochial and private schools. Private schools in particular I'm concerned about. It has to do with fleeing from ethnic groups and economic groups that they want their children to not be associated with. And that, in turn, is going to show up in an improper way in some of the research that is being done, because you are getting, not necessarily testing the school system and how it is different. You're testing the population that is entering that school.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk about data, there was a report, a study that just came out. In fact, there was a story on Wisconsin Public Radio, and since we are a public radio station, I'll mention this. Thursday of last week, March 2nd, this is a new study from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which is a right-wing think tank, essentially, shows students at the state's charter and at the state charters and private schools who participate in voucher programs got better scores on the ACT and the state tests. And then you read further, and this is the article from Wisconsin Public Radio, and it talks about how test scores are 4, 5, 6% higher depending on the grade level. And then when I read the executive summary from the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, they go into more detail. But there already are people who are questioning the study and how they went about gathering the data. And I think, you know, the point that you were making, Duane, about the private and parochial schools, or I should say the non-public schools, you know, let's not forget that a non-public school can pick and choose whichever students they wish to have or not have.
And they can return school kids back to the public schools that they want to keep.
That's right.
By the way, they have to, because that's part of the law. There's a compulsory requirement.
Right, but also keep in mind that if a child is going to a private or parochial school, a non-public school, that public school district in that contiguous boundary area is responsible for special education services or ESEA Chapter 1 or Title 1 reading and math.
Speech and language.
That's right. So the public schools still have a responsibility
to serve those students.
Absolutely. And that is federal law. That started out as Public Law 94-142 and then became became IDEA. And that is still in effect today. Regardless of all the federal programs, it is still in effect today. And a lot of people just tend to ignore that. A lot of public schools ignore it too. And I believe they violate the law all the time because they say we don't have room for your child, and these parents live in that district.
Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned, and I'm going to let Karen continue in a second, the one thing I wanted to at least expand upon a little bit that I found was interesting in your discussion and explanation of what goes on in the private and parochial schools is that not only do they exercise a tremendous amount of latitude as to who they admit and so forth, I think I can also, using that word admit, that limits what they choose to admit in terms of accountability and outcomes. They can paint a very, very rosy picture oftentimes of what test scores they choose to report. And is that not the case?
So two big studies just came out about Louisiana and Ohio where they did matched sets of so there weren't enough vouchers for all the families who wanted to use them. So they took the group that didn't get vouchers and the group that did, so they were fairly evenly matched.
Sure.
And they found, particularly in Louisiana, that there were enormous losses in test scores for the kids who went to the private voucher schools.
Losses,
like enormous 25% losses in math from one year to the next.
As in lower scores.
Lower scores. So the students would
cognitive
be
attrition.
That had been in public schools and then went to voucher schools in these particular places. This is not saying that every school is like this, but in big enough numbers that it wasn't it isn't an advantage.
What do they attribute those kind of that kind of phenomenon?
So there's another big study that came out of the University of Illinois a couple of years ago. It's called the Public School Advantage, and it was written by two professors who actually weren't even looking for this difference. But what they kind of concluded was one of the big differences between public and private is that the teachers are required to be certified in public schools, so they have some training in differentiation and working with all different kinds of populations. But also that there is sort of a hidden and kind of hard to measure, but clearly there advantage to diversity, and I'm not just talking about racial diversity, but just economic and all different kinds of diversity, that the people that attend public schools just are exposed to more different kinds of people. And so it translates into some kind of a positive effect.
And maybe there would be an advantage to that, although there would probably be an argument that that's not such good news after all. When you look at a lot of the reports about what's happening in school violence and so forth and so on.
There's not very much violence in schools. It's outside of schools.
Well, but what gets reported are the public schools.
Yes.
But it's not actually in the school buildings. It's outside.
Oh, understood.
Of them. Yeah.
We're living in a more diverse world too.
Sure.
And therefore, I think the public schools having more diversity then prepare the students better for the world that they're going to live in. I have two daughters and one granddaughter, who are professional women, and I look at them because they're graduates of Racine Unified Schools. I feel that they are prepared to live and work in the diverse worlds. One is in Minneapolis, one is in St. Paul, one is outside of Madison. They can handle the diversity of people just because of their own experiential backgrounds.
Mike, anything else you would like to add as far as this particular question about direction?
Well, about direction, I think that it's the direction that public education is going to take depends a lot on what happens in the next couple of years. But in particular, it depends upon our ability to hold on to good teachers. What I've seen in the last 5 years, particularly since Act 10, is a lot of good senior teachers leaving. And we have some excellent younger teachers coming in, but they need a cadre of older teachers in the school to help them through their early years. And it's becoming a problem. You also have the problem that we have teachers moving because Act 10 has created basically free agency for teachers because they can after they get a couple of years experience, they can go around and shop around to find places where competitive school districts are trying to lure them with larger salaries.
But Mike, I agree with you 100%. But we talked before about the the viewpoint that the public has in terms of how schools are run and issues of public confidence. There are many who would say, you know, the other side of that coin, and I agree, by the way, with what you just said, the other side of the coin is that's the free market, you know. And but I find that a lot of Wisconsin teachers, you know, I mean, I think the example, Karen, you talked about a lot of your undergraduates who get their teaching degree at Carthage, who live in Illinois, many of them go back to Illinois, mm-hmm. but there are many Wisconsin teachers who are moving to Minnesota, for instance. Their salaries are higher, there are stronger unions there, and so or they're leaving the area altogether, or you know, as we've been saying, or they leave education altogether. So how do we respond to someone, though, Mike, if someone says, hey, you know, that's tough, that's the free market. If another district can pay a special ed teacher another $10,000, then, you know, why shouldn't Chuck move from, you know, Kenosha Unified to
Turtle Creek.
That's right, to Turtle Creek or wherever
it happens to be.
Well, but rather than responding with more professional teachers, what we do is we lower the standards then in terms of who can be a teacher. We're already seeing that, I think, in terms of vocational kinds of teachers here in the state of Wisconsin. And that, you know, it seems criminal in terms of giving kids people who are not fully prepared to work with them and prepare them for the world they're going to live in.
Well, before we drift off a little bit farther, I just want to stick with what I think Steve and I were getting to with regard to the attitude or the public towards teachers. Mm-hmm. I don't think the public realizes how much of a debt we owe to the especially the senior teachers, mm-hmm. who have decided, because of a very high level of dedication, to stay with the school district. They have carried this school district the last couple of years. We'd be in much more difficulty, mm-hmm. than we are if not for them. We focus a lot on administrators, on central office administrators in particular, but what I always bring up when this topic comes up is that's called the Educational Support Center. The heavy lifting is done by the teachers, mm-hmm. and the students and the
Absolutely.
Parents. And the central administration is there to support that process, and mm-hmm. the public focuses on all the political soap opera issues that might be going on in a particular district, and there's lots of soap opera in school district politics, and doesn't realize how much the teachers in the trenches are, mm-hmm. are doing.
You know, and what I said before, and I know time is fleeting because I'm looking at Chuck here and he's looking at the clock, but you know, when I said before that our teachers in all of our schools, all of our public schools, are extraordinary, and teachers in the private and parochial schools who have teacher certification from accredited institutions, they all do an outstanding job. Okay, the vast, vast majority of teachers do an incredible job, and I think, you know, I've seen buttons, you know, I love my school, I love our teachers, or thank a teacher, you know, those are just not words for me.
Correct.
I believe in this, and when I sit in a school board meeting as a school board member, and I say these things at a board meeting, I have people looking at me in the audience like, who is this person? You know, I'm a person who believes in education, and I believe in public education and the importance of it.
And I think every one of us sitting here would agree that we are here and in this profession because we believe that education matters, to coin that, the title of this show and to reinforce that. We were talking about this earlier, about the critics, and most of them have benefited most richly from a good public education. A lot of other critics that are sitting in some of the meetings perhaps that Steve attends are thinking, well, you just want everyone to go to college, but I'm proud of my history in the trades, mm-hmm. and my family's tradition in the trades, and I applaud them. The bank president is only as good at making sure that a transaction is sealed with another executive as long as the toilet works when that other executive goes to visit the men's room or the ladies' room, and that reposes confidence. And we have to get to a point where we realize that we're all in this together. I would say most of those critics from the national standpoint, now I'll be going to another level here in terms of the questioning, probably do not have a marketable skill and have not done an, if you want to measure it, an honest day's work in their life, yet they are in a position where they can comment. Which brings us to another level. We've talked about locally what we think is the direction and some of the greater challenges in education. What are your thoughts and our thoughts and concerns about federal education policy? That's right up at the top, and the direction is likely to go under the current with the current administration that's in office, and the certainly Secretary of Education that's been confirmed. I'll let Karen start.
I always get to start.
Well, it was a tradition.
Well,
ladies first.
I'm actually more concerned about what's going on in the Congress and House Bill 610, where the intention, as written, is to block grant Title I funding to the states in the form of vouchers. I sit on the Title I committee at my son's school, so I know what they do with that money. Title I money, for listeners who might not be aware, is extra money that's awarded through the federal government to schools with high percentages of low-income students. Bullen's low-income population is over 60%. Is that right? It's closer to 70-something?
It's pretty high.
It's very high. And so, and I know what the school does. They have a committee with parents and community members to help make decisions about what to do with the money. And what they do generally is hire additional people to help with students with traumatic stress and all kinds of other things, and professional development for teachers. And if that money goes away, I'm not really sure exactly what's going to happen. We'll lose probably five positions working specifically with low-income children, and I am really concerned about how that's going to play out.
And I'm very concerned about our Secretary of Education at the national level, Betsy DeVos. She supports having federal dollars follow students with regards to Title I, and that's about $15 billion on a national level. Having the dollars follow the students. And I'll just make a few other comments about the Secretary of Education. She has no experience whatsoever in education.
Well, she was a student.
Or public education.
In public education. And also she believes in conversion therapy if you happen to be gay or lesbian. And she believes that intelligent design should be taught in our schools alongside of evolution. So, you know, all those are pretty controversial things. So, you know, I'm hopeful that we won't see, you know, if I can use the title of the article I did with Cheryl Brown Henderson, I hope we're not marching back to the future, if you will, or to the past in this case, with education in this country.
The topic that you just raised was my topic on last week's Education Matters, and I had Rebecca Stevens on, and we were talking about the fact that the budget that has been prepared, as that has become known, is going to cut all funding for programs like RSVP, Foster Grandparent, Kenosha Literacy Council, those are programs that are really vital to schools. At this time, as to the future, there's one thing that I think Wisconsin has that gives us some hope, and that is that the Secretary of Education in Wisconsin is a constitutional level office. The legislature has tried to interfere with the operation of that office, and the governor has tried to interfere, and the courts have said this is a constitutional elected office, and that person has independence, and that is at least some opportunity for some leadership in other directions.
Dwayne?
And by the way, the election is April the 4th, and
there
are two candidates, and so be sure and vote then so that we can continue to have high-quality education here in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, this has been Education Matters on WGTD 91.1 FM, your Kenosha gateway to public education. I'm co-moderator Chuck Wolbers, and today's show has featured a panel including the Education Matters show co-moderators Steve Brown, Karen Sconzert, Dwayne Olson, and Mike Keough. We've discussed their backgrounds and involvement with the show And Education Matters is the only weekly program in Southeast Wisconsin that's devoted exclusively to education issues and matters. Now, five co-hosts with different education-related backgrounds and perspectives take turns leading the program, which airs Saturdays from 10:30 to 11:15, as you've just heard. And we are all very, very glad that we can obviously take part in this forum and contribute to each other's growth. We're grateful for the support and interest in the broad range of expertise and contribution to the education profession, because education matters. Until next time, thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
I'm Gregory Brooks.